last 100 years, Hartford's gone from being the richest city in the country to the poorest. The city's in crisis, from public education to public safety. The question for Hartford today is, have we reached the bottom? Is Hartford turning around?
Welcome to Hartford 2020, a weekly program on the problems and opportunities facing the city of Hartford. On this program, you'll hear politicians and community activists, scholars and gadflies, and people from across Hartford's many communities sharing with us their candid opinions about how Hartford reached this point and where it's going. I'm Jay Hughes, Associate Director of Institutional Research and Planning at Trinity College.
And I'm Ivan Kuzik, the Director of the city's Data Center at Trinity College. Stay tuned for an hour exploring the future of Hartford. Wilson Foudy has been a feature of Hartford life since the 1970s, when he became director of the Mark Twain Memorial, one of the city's preeminent historical and cultural treasures. Later, as director of the old State House in downtown, he oversaw efforts to expand and restore the building to its former glory. Often wearing many hats and always appearing to have fun, Foudy was part curator, part gadfly, part pitchman. Credited with his fine work as a curator, he's also well known for his creative use of marketing and fundraising. As the author of an excellent series of books documenting Old Hartford, Foudy has a good sense of what Hartford was, what it is, and what it can be. This interview was recorded on June 12th at Trinity College.
Bill, looking through your gorgeous collections of historic photographs, I get a real nostalgic sense of the Hartford of old. Do you see a connection between Hartford then and now?
Well, the golden years, it's sort of like the good old days, were perfectly terrible. And if you're going to bring back the architecture of 1870, I hate to clue you in, you also need to bring back polio, smallpox, unpaved roads, dogs running wild, biting. I mean, you just can't do the parts you like. Is there a connection between Hartford then and now? I think there is, and I'm going to tell a story. I've been working on cow parade that's coming to West Hartford and playing with mottos. And my 15-year-old daughter, looking over my shoulder, said, "And what is that?" And the motto was, "After the cloud, sun." And I said, "That's the city of Hartford's motto." And her reply was, "Has Hartford always been down on itself? Who would start their motto with a negative?" And you know, she's right. Most cities start with, "After the sun, more sun," or "Land of happiness and wealth." Not us, folks. No, no, no. We got to start with the rain. And I think it's time to stop that. The good old days are now. The golden era is now. And we're alive now. The governor is pumping how many billion dollars into that thing called Adrian's Landing? This is bad news. And the jobs it will create? You have institutions like the Wadsworth Athenaeum, a premier art institution, whose misfortune is that it's the America's oldest public art museum, so it's been here so long we take it for granted. You want to go almost to any other city, don't do Boston or New York on me. Those are different kind of worlds. You won't find a museum like the Athenaeum anywhere. The Mark Twain House, Harriet Beecher Stowe House, I mean, all this stuff. But it's Hartford, you know? And I used to be a cheerleader for Hartford, and people would say, "Why?" I said, "Well, one, I believe in it. Two, the other's so depressing, I want to leave too." And we need to, you know, forget after the clouds, folks, just to stop. Could we get on with it? I've often said that Hartford's problems are sort of like picking up your messy room. You cannot do it in one shot. But week one, let's start with the socks. And week two, we'll do socks and shirts. And week three, the point is, begin. And it won't be perfect. Your first step will not be that of a ballerina, but it's a beginning.
Do you think that your position as someone who's been involved in the preservation of the memory of Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, gives you a kind of unique perspective on these kinds of problems? I mean, what would Samuel Clemens have said about the situation we find ourselves in, the inequities and the lack of efficiency of public services and all of that? I imagine he would have been biting.
Well, he would go ballistic. He did a wonderful essay on India, talking about how it has the best of all. the greatest Raja, the most fabulous jewels, lions, tigers, and bears, the best of all, the greatest poverty, the greatest caste system. You know, there's Twain at his best. Turn the corner and the fist is in your face. And he would probably say of Hartford, do you mean they still can't get out of their own way? Yeah, I thought they would have solved this by now. On the other hand, mass transit is a major problem in Hartford. But thanks to the winter, and somebody in Hartford must have made off with the gravel, because we got potholes in Hartford that you don't have in any other city around here or town, and we all had the same winter. So you have to ask, okay, who stole the gravel? But as the streets are popping, you will see, for example, on Farmington Avenue, that the trolley tracks are still in the roadbed, which makes you wonder, since we've got the trolley tracks, maybe we ought to just go up to the trolley museum and borrow a couple and get on with it. Because trolleys work far better than buses. They just go down the middle. They don't screw up the traffic. They don't belch fumes. Buses, 1989, peak of employment. How many fewer buses are there today than there were in 89? Remember, dead air, gentlemen, you got to do something. You can't just sit here quiet.
We don't know. How many?
Same number. Wouldn't want to cut that subsidy, would we? Shocking. Boulder, Colorado had the similar problem. 70% of the buses were paid for by the state, had to come up with 30, but people weren't riding the buses. So they did a very illogical thing. They went and talked to the riders, potential riders. They found they wanted smaller buses. They wanted them to run more often. They wanted passes that meant you really could go to a concert and show your pass and get home, etc. They let the riders help design the interiors. They let the bus drivers design the uniforms. They now have 93% ridership. They only needed 30 to pay the bills. They do not believe that the most important thing is whether the bus is on time, but rather, are the customers riding it and are the customers happy? In Hartford, we do it exactly the other way around. We have all these little white vehicles out there with little people with clipboards. And what they are doing is making sure the bus, although it empty, is on time. Now, who gives a damn if the damn thing's on time if nobody's using the product? And we have to get back to saying, if they're not using the product, what are we doing wrong? Why aren't they using the product? Is it a product they no longer want? Or, following Boulder, since this isn't a very big area, if we had the smaller buses and they came down, let's say, Main Street in West Hartford, and I would ride the bus. And when you realize you only have to come up with 30% of the thing because the state's picking up the rest, and, you know, how do you want it to work? What would get you to take the bus? Well, downtown Hartford, could you run it after 4:30, please, so I could get home? Oh, after 4:30, this is no. And yet we keep dumping money at these things. When it doesn't work, we dump more money. I mean, the education school solution, dump more money. What's all this magnet schools? Why aren't we taking our existing schools and making them magnet? I mean, why do we keep having to just throw money at it when the money hasn't worked? Common sense has not been employed. Talking about parking. They build this new garage behind Fox's. It's fabulous. It really is. And then they do the incredibly stupid thing of changing all the meters in downtown Hartford to 25 cents a minute. Yeah. Now, that's fine. I understand the logic if you're near the parking garage. But if you're down by the bus station, or if you're up by Butler McCook and the Federal, you're not near the garage. So your reaction is going to be, you're not going to come back. We forget that we don't have a lock on it. They don't need to come here.
I suppose I wonder, you know, the comparison between Boulder and Hartford is, I think, very, very sort of telling and very apt. You know, I, not being sort of as familiar with Boulder as I am with Hartford, I wonder to a degree whether what Hartford isn't lacking is sort of more citizen, you know, more involvement from citizens, more civic mindedness. You know,
say if we get any more citizen involvement, we'll never get out of the forum. You know, everybody's got to talk. It'll take another 5 hours.
I suppose I guess I'm
There are times I want a benevolent despot just to say, buses, here we go.
I suppose to a degree, you know, I agree, but.
Have you ever been to a city council hearing?
Well,
want to go running, screaming out of the room, hoping that you can just get home before your brain really tells you you've been listening to idiocy? No offense, ladies and gentlemen, on the current city council, but this is not distinguished debating. This is not great policy. These are often children in a sandbox behaving very badly and not solving problems to get the job done.
It sounds like you missed the bishops.
The bishops never existed. The bishops were created by Arthur Lumsden on his last interview leading the Greater Hartford Chamber of Commerce to the Hartford Current, and he referred to this group as the bishops. They never called themselves the bishops. There was a committee called the No Name Committee, which was a group of the chieftains, if you were, head of Aetna, the Hartford, Travelers, the banks. And they would once every couple months get together and share common issues. One of the issues years ago that came before them in 75 was whether the old state house should be saved or whether it should indeed be torn down into a parking lot. And Morrison Beach, then the head of the Travelers, had been the lone vote on the chamber board who had said, don't touch the building. Other 39 had said, let it become a parking lot. It's doing nothing. And the bishops got together and they toured the building. And I was part of the group helping to save the building. So I helped tour them. These people, I'd heard the names. Herb Shane of the Hartford, John Filer of the, I mean, these are big people. And they decided, yeah, this really was a neat historic building. Now that didn't do anything because we still had to go to them one by one. By one, to persuade them or their corporate philanthropy people, you know, to give us support. I mean, it didn't do anything. There never was a college of cardinal or bishops that unilaterally changed your life for you. But the fact the myth has been created as if it is real shows you how desperate we almost are for someone just come in and tell me what to do. Years ago, we had parking on Main Street, cars parked on Main Street. And then some bright wizard decided that they should give up Main Street to the bus company. Even in New York City, you don't get all the way down Main Street, you know, with no ins and outs. Well, the result is at 4:30, you come out, or 5, and you think the bomb went off. There are no cars around. And no cars around because no cars can park, so there are no cars around. And it creates this feeling of, I don't want to be here. And now the meters that there are on the side streets are 25 cents a second. I don't want to be here either. And who's going to walk around when there's no one walking around? And you get nervous. And when you start getting nervous, trouble usually starts to happen. We don't believe in ourselves. We believe in our problems. We had a fabulous group at the old State House. Well, even at the Mark Twain, both, who didn't understand we couldn't do it. The Mark Twain, we still had apartments in the building. I mean, you were there as a tour guide. You saw us working room by room. But we never believed we couldn't get back all this original furniture or that we shouldn't be in National Geographic 3 times in 3 years. 80 million readers, you bet. Or Alistair Cook in 76 shouldn't be our annual meeting speaker for free. We didn't know any better. Well, you couldn't pick up the phone and call the curators at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and ask them a question. And later they became very good friends. Same thing at the old State House. We had to raise, it turned out, $12 million. We didn't know we couldn't do it. The result is, it's done. Or finding a two-headed calf. Or Time Magazine.
Tell us the story about the two-headed calf. I read a little bit about it, but apparently you did a national search for the two-headed calf.
Well, sort of. When the building opens in 1796, Joseph Stewart has a museum on the upper floor, and he had a painting room, it's called a little art gallery, and nobody came to see it. The Wadsworths should listen to this story. And so he closed it, and 6 months later reopened, adding to his paintings natural and other curiosities, including a two-headed calf. when we were planning the whole renovation and giving it new footings and all that, the Senate chamber we could do. We had most of the furniture. The state had loaned the Gilbert Stuart Portrait of Washington. Council chamber you could do is City Hall, 1878. But I also knew, because I was director before the renovation, how tough this building was to make it, pardon me, sexy, or to make it welcoming. It's a very formal facade. You sort of feel that unless you're a white empowered Yankee, you don't belong here. And we reopened the building. I said, museums are steps, portrait of dead white guys and boring. And we've worked hard to eliminate all three. So it was natural that we would bring back Stewart's Museum. Now, I will admit, I think some of the board members nodded because they thought I was just talking about his paintings. I knew better. And everybody I could find, I was telling the story of Stuart. And people were wonderful. They were giving us piranhas. And one lady invited me to her house, and there on the wall was a unicorn horn. And she kept trying to tell me it was a narwhal tusk. But I knew better because I'd seen the unicorn horn at the Habsburg Museum in Vienna, given to Franz Joseph by the Bishop of wherever. And it was good enough for Franz Joseph. It certainly was for me. And in the spirit of Joseph Stuart. But one day, as we were getting ready to reopen the building for its 200th birthday, the fax machine burped at 4:30 in the morning, and we were all working these ungodly hours, as you do when you're about to move back in and reopen a building, and you've invited the entire state to show up, and you haven't had a staff running this thing in 4 years. So there's a lot of work to be done. And the fax machine burped, and it was a friend of a friend of a friend telling me that a two-headed calf had been born in Sheboygan, Michigan, and the Brown farm, and they were going to sell it. And so I waited till it was 5:30 out there because I knew farmers get up early. And I called, and I got Sue Brown and introduced myself and explained that I needed their two-headed calf and why. And she said that they were farmers. They'd also lost the mother, and so this was a problem. They were going to have it stuffed, but they wanted $2,500 for it. I explained that I had lived near a farm much of my life. My father was from Detroit, Michigan, and I would offer him $3,000 to retire the deed. Done. Sent them the documents. They signed it. I sent them half a check right then and there. Got it stuffed. Sent him the check, and I said, just mark the crate household goods. You mark it two-headed calf, I'm never going to see it. And it's the kind of thing, people say, why did you offer them more? Well, the answer is, they've had a terrible tragedy. I mean, losing a cow, a mother cow, is not small. And they're solving your problem, you can solve part of theirs. You don't have to get excessive. And I think both of us thought it was a terrific experience. And when it was then featured in People magazine, I made sure they got copies. And it's been in GQ, and they got copies. Of course, some people would say, I hope you took out parts of the magazine GQ. And the answer is, we're all building audiences. But we didn't know that you couldn't. And, you know, I often say, don't take my yes away without asking. You don't ask. It's the same place it is if you didn't. And one of Hartford's problems is they don't understand that nobody needs Hartford. I mean, you go out to Canton or Buckland or whatever, and you know what? Hartford's not on the radar. So Hartford's got to figure out how to get some two-headed calves, something you can't find somewhere else.
Do you mean that in terms of economic development as well? I mean, what distinctively Hartford might have to offer the state economy, something that it could specialize in?
Homestead the stuff. Give it away. I mean, we sit here. You go and you want to buy a building. Oh, you know, back taxes. So by the time we finish screwing around, the building's caught fire and burned. Capewell. You know, how much jerking around do it? You've got a non-performing asset sitting there. It's been sitting there, what, 15 years? And we're all sitting here saying, you got to come up with. What do you mean you got to? I don't have to come up with anything. And then it burns again. Now, three times? How many windows in a factory need to be broken before you suspect that one of them is going to have a Coke bottle with the kid seeing if not what he read about will work? And there it goes. Bye. I mean, this isn't rocket science. The bill, homesteading the homes. That's how they turned Savannah around. Savannah wasn't always this glamorous place. A lot of those old mansions were empty, forlorn. They gave them away. You want to come in? You want to come in? Okay, here's the deal. No taxes, got to live there 5 years. All improvements you put will take off your tax bill for the next five. Bum, 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 bum. Okay, what else do you need? Oh, yeah, we'll help you get block grants. Here we go. All of a sudden, you rebuild a neighborhood. Yeah, tell the guy in Avon to sell that house for $5 million, and I'll give you the house for free. How many acres you want with it? Smile. And all of a sudden, you're involved. No, can't be done. No. You owe $100 on the taxes. Rather see the building burned. No. In Hartford, if you auction off a property, the person can still claim it back in 180 days. So it's going to sit another 180 days? Face it. Once you sell it, it's gone. Bye. Or if it's contested, it's contested, you know. But a lot of these houses, if you think that's contested, I'd like to talk to you about, is the flames you're licking up the No. They haven't paid the taxes. Nail them.
You've pinpointed the failure of Constitution Plaza as one of the keys to understanding the failure of Hartford.
Constitution Plaza was a fabulous idea.
Okay.
And I wasn't always this defender. Front Street, as we romantically know it, is like New York's Lower East Side. And the moment you had 37 cents, you got your family out of there. In the fall and the spring, it would flood. There were gangs. It was not safe. Yes, you remember. It's like New York's Lower East Side. You lived above your store and you knew all your neighbors and you knew who your neighbors were sleeping with and you knew all the crime. And yeah, this wasn't a great place to bring up anything. But like New York's Lower East Side, we cling to it. And the smells of the French bread, we seem to forget the smells of the dung and the sewers. And so anyway, so you've got these, 6-8 acres? It depends sort of how you measure. And the gas company came with the idea of creating, in a sense, a modern shopping district. And they would all do it with underground steam and underground chilled water. And they built it at the height they did. And this is key. It is the same height as Main Street at the Richardson. And there was a land bridge that went right down Temple Street, the way you now have from the plaza to the Hartford Steam Boiler Building. There was a land bridge that went right down Temple Street and connected to the clock tower. And the thing is laid out in a classic, almost Simarx palazzo. There is the clock tower. There are the shops around fountains. There is the main banking floor. There are more fountains. There were small water gardens by Sasaki. You then went on, sort of in the direction of Hartford Steam Boiler, to where you had the convention center and the hotel. So you have now put this all together as a block. This is not a bad idea. And everything's up there. And the water fountains, the water gardens, the amenities. Well, the original builder went belly up, and Arthur Lumsden convinced the travelers, you got to take it on. You're the closest one. You got to take it on. Phoenix couldn't. They were in the process of building their buildings. Well, the travelers, not being big in real estate, decided we got to cut this thing back. So out goes the land bridge. Oops. Now, you remember, we had Brentano's, we had Sloan, we had Jay Press. These are not small things. Nick Carbone and others decide not to allow the convention center hotel to go where it should have gone, right by the highway. Instead, because various people allegedly owned land, they dump it where all the merchants were happy, called the Civic Center. And Roach and all these places that were there that end up fleeing to West Hartford. And you get rid of the Allen Theater and you get rid of Mario's Restaurant. I mean, these wonderful places. There were some antique stores. There was the little passport place where you could go and they could do your picture in an hour. Now, this sounds today like, yeah? Well, let me tell you, back in the 60s, a picture in an hour was a big deal, particularly when you needed that passport. And there was a little garage where you parked stuff up on stilts, and it worked. And they were thriving. And these were merchants who were there, and they were the original Frank's Restaurant was there, and it worked. So now, here we go. You take a non-performing asset. You make it Constitution Plaza. You take swampland, and instead of putting the convention center and the Coliseum there, no, you put it right where the heart is beating soundly. And then you design this thing that looks like a parking garage called the Civic Center. That's a what? I go there. The people would say, I found the garage. Where's the Coliseum? And, you know,
you see the big bomb as the Civic Center, not the Constitution Plaza.
Oh, yeah, Constitution Plaza. And they're talking about putting the land bridge back.
Right.
And they're talking about, I mean, it would have worked. Now, the problem is it didn't, because they so cut its throat, that West Farms gets created. And now Buckland has been created. You know, they've waited almost yet again too late. Had they built the land bridge and all, Buckland's might not have gotten created.
Downtown has less than 2,000 people in it now. They also took out a lot of housing in those.
Well, not in Constitution Plaza, but there were great apartments on Pratt Street. Mm-hmm. I know friends had one above Loring's studio. I mean, there were. But where are you going to go eat? You know, you can't live downtown and you need a car.
Yeah.
There's no grocery. You can't do the bus. The bus doesn't take you to a market. You've got to think it so that I'll go there, so you'll go there. You can't think it so that nobody, the decisions made by the corporate chieftains, I used to say sometimes, you know, why don't you have them have to buy groceries for a week? And here are the parameters. They cannot have their secretary do it, and they need to do it some point during the day or on their way home. And let's see if they then are as eager to get rid of the market that was right by Fox's, or the drugstore that's right, or Society for Savings when they wiped out an entire block from Maine and Asylum.
Yep.
And there were great stores in there.
Right.
And there was Class B office space. Everybody doesn't need, want, or can afford Class A. That's fine for United Technologies. Some of these people just need, well, not unlike the room we're in.
Your mention of the land bridge is very interesting because I think one of the popular urban planning theories is that you need to create spaces where people naturally intersect each other, where they meet each other, kind of sociable spaces in the city, and that a lot of urban design has ignored that to its peril. As you said, it looks like...
Well, normally it wouldn't be for land bridge, but when you've built the entire plaza above street level to match the neighboring street, you got to give them the land bridge. Mm-hmm. Classic is riverfront recapture. You know, Joe Marfucci and that group, fabulous. And here they just go along and they keep adding pieces and they get the riverfront piece done. But there's a section over Columbus Boulevard that they haven't got the money for, and the Army Corps of Engineers has so over-designed it, and allegedly the Phoenix said, well, you can't actually touch our building, so it all has to be cantilevered. But anyway, they get the Riverfront Plaza open, and I'm proud to say I was helpful in persuading a couple people to give them the missing million. And they put in that connecting bridge, and attendance went up over 50%. Right away, because people could figure it out now easily. They were still going up those sort of what I call mountain goat stairs, but when they could just go right across the Phoenix Gateway, bingo, bingo.
You're a photographer of the urban architecture. I imagine that gives you also kind of unique perspective because you're always wandering around looking at everything and trying to figure out, you know, if it's attractive or not.
One of the biggest problems of modern, last 20 years architecture, our buildings, not many of them are just silly. They look like kids' tinker toys. I mean, they're just badly done. But the biggest problem is most buildings today don't have either a streetscape, you know, windows and things, but most of them don't tell you where the entrance is. Entrances used to be almost temples. You couldn't miss the entrance. Now you walk by and wait for the panel to slide, and then you don't know if that's an entrance or not. The Gold Building, where's the entrance? If you don't know, who's going to tell you? Well, you sort of can figure it out because the people are smoking outside, but, you know, that's not how you should figure out an entrance. And when you make buildings not humanly exciting or accessible or understandable, I'm not going to go.
You're listening to Hartford 2020 on WRTC, the radio station of Trinity College. Hartford 2020 is a weekly program on the problems and opportunities facing the city of Hartford. On this program, you'll hear politicians and community activists, scholars and gadflies, and people from across Hartford's many communities sharing with us their candid opinions about how Hartford reached this point and where it's going. Guests include former city manager Al Ilg, Councilwoman Elizabeth Horton Scheff, former deputy mayor and mayoral candidate Bob Ludkin, Judge Raymond Norco, and labor leader Ed Vargas. Hartford 2020 is a joint project of Trinity College's Cities Data Center, the Office of Institutional Research and Planning, and WRTC. Your hosts are me, Jay Hughes, Associate Director of the Institutional Research and Planning Office, and Ivan Kuzik, Director of the Cities Data Center. For more information about upcoming shows or to listen to shows on the web, visit Hartford 2020's webpage at www.trincoll.edu, that's TRINCOLL, /departments/DPTS/IRP/, or call 860-297-2112, or email us at james.hughes, that's james.hughes, at trincoll.edu, trincoll.edu. Stay tuned for more of our interview with William Foudy, the former director of the Mark Twain Association and the Old State House in Hartford.
What's your impression of the Bushnell Towers space? Do you think that was a piece of modern architecture?
No, that was I.M. Pei without much money who sold the design, and the developer who bought it never skinned the building in marble. But if you go to Philadelphia, you see almost the same building with its marble skin, and it's wonderful. But the plugs are still there in the concrete where the marble would sit in. Now, inside, the spaces are lovely. I mean, Pei was always good at that. But this was, people forget that, you know, wonderful Pei. You know, Jackie's darling and all that. Yeah, you know, he started out small and he had to sell his designs. There was supposed to be a twin tower next to it with a space in between for the Capitol where they built Bushnell too. But the fact that the building doesn't have its skin is really what, instead of making it a sort of glistening, wonderful thing, it's sort of like bad concrete on a rainy day, and it's sort of brown and not a very nice brown. And there are some plans I've seen that that whole lobby was supposed to be part of the connector to the other one. So you're looking at not what you're supposed to be looking at because they only built one.
You referenced Savannah, and I visited Savannah last year and had read that book, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
I met that man.
Oh, you did?
I was interviewed by Jim Williams.
Oh, were you?
And I had the same interview, except he showed me Hitler's silver service. And there were Nazi flags, and he went through the whole description of Christmas parties, and we were upstairs, and he is playing this pipe organ, and he kept saying to me, "Do you want to play the organ?" I have never been so glad to get out of a building in my life intact.
Well, Savannah is a very gothic place, but that was actually my question, is that Savannah has this kind of this drooping gothic architectural style, which I understand is actually part of that's been mandated in certain areas. And is that something that you think would benefit sections of Hartford to
just
have?
Just do it. Yeah. I don't care what you do. Just do something.
Yeah.
Would you stop talking? You know, just.
But
you
you're not an advocate of any particular architectural vision.
After we homestead and all, let's go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But you see, they're creating a whole tourist thing.
Yeah. But the homesteading could be kind of facilitated by having some kind of architectural vision because it might, people could be attracted to that project. On the other hand, it could discourage them.
Well, and, you know, Main Street, I mean, real preservation is the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st, and 22nd century. That growth is good. It shouldn't all be encapsulated. Now, we have torn down a lot of stuff we never should have. I think we've also saved some stuff that I go, why? But, you know, some of this bad stuff we let, when they built Northeast Plaza, those State Street towers right by the old State House, they closed Kinsley Street. They closed Temple Street for the Mixmaster. I mean, we have made our city not flow. City is streets and noise and this. You know, Athenaeum Square South, Burr Mall, where the Stegosaurus is, they closed that. And I'm not saying that Stegosaurus shouldn't stay. I am saying you can't keep closing all the streets and accept the place to flow.
Do you buy into the fact that there's been a war of the downtown against the neighborhoods for the last 25 years and sort of serious planning in Hartford is blunted because there's almost an equal balance of forces and you really can't get anything done without someone being able to veto it?
Well, except I think it's a war that's created almost like Animal Farm, that you create the war if it will take care of the fact you're A, not doing anything, or B, doing handsomely personally, thank you very much, and why would I change the status quo? The parking garage situation. They vote to extend it 20 years? What was it?
12 years, I think.
Well, but it's, it was already eight, and they're going to, excuse me? This thing, which should be like a 3-year or 3-month contract, and there are nights when the city manager calls up and the person says, well, gee, I know there's a UConn game last night, but nobody parked in the garage, so I have no receipts for you. Why would we change this status quo? You know, and that's the problem. People are not serious. And there's some very good counselors. I mean, Dr. Painter, I mean, there's some very good. But what they should have done in the council reform is had, yes, some at large the way they do, but they also should have had some by the old ward system that absolutely represented the north, the south, the east, the west. The problem is, most of the people on the council don't live anywhere near the North End. And so you get this disparity. And, you know, you ought to live, some of them ought to live in the district and hear the problems and also be able to educate us to the problems.
Which gets back to your homesteading idea.
Yeah. But also, you've got a non-performing asset. It's just sitting there catching fire. So, we have a what are you going to do? Look at it? Sell tickets to the free show, use it for fire training, use it for police training, or stop it. And the bulldozer is not the answer. I mean, that's one of Evan Nobel of Trinity's great lines. The bulldozer is not the answer. Look at the learning corridor. You remember? 7 years ago, you wouldn't go there after 5 o'clock? Well, if you did, you probably wouldn't come home. And I remember Evan trying to get him to let him build the science center there. Oh, no, the science center had to go to East Hartford. Oh, no. Good. So now we have nothing. Thank you very much. You know, the science center would be up and functioning and thriving.
And the new Connecticut Historical Society isn't going to be built in Hartford either anymore.
It's what I read. I mean, I found that... I was never sure about the validity of those plans. They seem to be a lot of talk. I watch people, what they do. You know, a lot of people love to stir the soup and never serve lunch. Or as one friend describes people as being Pigpen and Peanuts. Standing still, but the cloud of dirt looks like forward movement, but he's standing still.
You mentioned a lot about we should just get things going. Or they should get things going.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, sort of to cut back to the Hartford of today, in a city which only 12% of adults have a college degree, how well, you know, can we possibly expect sort of the citizenry of the city to demand good services if most of the people who in the region have the education, probably have the resources to do these things, no longer, as you said, feel any need to have anything, you know, to have anything to do with Hartford at all?
Yeah, it's off the radar. Well, either that or they need to just pick another capital city and get on with it. I've often suggested that maybe one answer is to give Waterbury, New Haven, Bridgeport, New London, and Hartford no sales tax. And then you turn to the Tony Marches and you say, okay, now that cars cost 6% less here, I want you to set up a job training thing because without being stereotypical, one thing that teenage guys seem to like to do is work on cars. And Tony's response was, and I'm going to need them, because if we do that, we're going to be selling so many cars, I'm going to need technicians here who can keep them maintained. And of course, the human cry would go up everywhere. How could you do this? What? All of a sudden, Hartford gets an ace and it's evil? It's time to go for the aces. And they've done this partially in places like Newark. But, you know, where are you going to buy your luxury whatever, your high-priced goods? You'd buy them in your major cities. But it's going to take something like that, because all of the feeling-good stuff ain't going to do it.
Can't we just raise taxes on everybody else?
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that gets problematic is you raise the taxes on the people who are already paying the most taxes. You know, those are also the people who have the freedom to be fluid. And so they don't stay. Or at least they don't stay 6 months and a day.
So was your tax on windows at the state capitol responsible for the decline of
the old state house? No, they paid.
Tell us that story, the tax on windows.
Well, one of the things we need to do at the old state house was to engage the community around us. That originally Hartford National Bank, the Travelers, you know, all these corporations, businesses, all of whom I was aware looked down on us. Well, actually jockeyed for seats to look down on us. And one day I was sort of out there thinking, you know, how can we get them and their office employees? Because they're here. I mean, they should be coming in hourly. I mean, they should be involved. We should be their closest friend. And suddenly realized, and we always needed money, that maybe the thing to do was to tax them $10 a window. And hopefully we try to tax the person who sat in the window as opposed to the corporation again. And so I got the late Bob Newell, who was then head of Hartford National, now Fleet, and he agreed to chair the committee, and we counted, had an intern count up all the windows, and we invited everybody we could find to a viewing rights committee. And Bob Newell chaired it, and he introduced the motion that there'd be a $10 window tax placed in every window. Do I have a move? Do I have a second? It's done. And then we had a cocktail party. And that was it. So then we sent out bills to everybody. And a lot of people paid. And they got a certificate that said in the year of Washington's, the founding of the state, Washington's presidency, and of the old state house. And it came with a wooden nickel saying paid in full. They also got 10% off in our gift shop. That was not a dollar I was losing. That was nine I was never seeing. Now, the one exception back then to having the person who sat in the window pay came from the Travelers. And they had something like 953 windows. And Fred Maynard, who was then in charge of this stuff, the Travelers, wrote me a letter saying, "Dear Bill, first I have to let you know the Travelers is going to pay the check, but I'll get to that later. Second, you gave us 953 windows. Eight of them are restrooms, and seven of them are elevators. And since we're not sure who actually is using these, we're going to decline to pay those spaces. And lastly, we have decided to pay the check in full ourselves, because we know that if we go up to an employee who is sitting looking out the window and we go, 'Excuse me, get back to work,' we're going to hear, 'Excuse me, I paid for this view.'" But it was with great humor, and people loved it. And it made Time Magazine, and it made National Geographic, and it made the New York Times, and it made, and it made. I get calls from the Statue of Liberty Foundation. "Do you think it'll work here?" And I said, "Try it. You've got very little to lose." And it also is with a sense of humor. You must never in fundraising approach everything like Eeyore. Because if you do, guess what? That's where you're headed. Mm-hmm. "Oh, no, we can't make it. And here's your window tax, $10 a window." Outrageous, yes, but they get the certificate and they loved it. Arthur Anderson Consulting, Roger Gelfenbein, good friend. He would always forget to pay the window tax, because as it evolved, corporations ended up picking it up. And every year we would start the crafts show in the end of November. And every year his secretary would be one of the first. And every year she would say, "And I work at Anderson Consulting," and we would have to say, I hate to do this to you, but Roger hasn't paid the thing, so we can't give you the 10%. Now, if you want to put it aside till tomorrow, that's fine. And every year we'd put it aside. She'd go home. She'd call Roger. Roger would call me. He would promise me the check would be in the mail by Friday, and I would tell him I would take his word. And it became almost a ritual. But it also happened that one day the hatch in the roof blew open. And one of the people across the street noticed it and called us up. And that's what we also wanted, them to be part of us. Because they had a perspective. And we're in this thing together.
How'd you get involved in this old photographs project? You published books, these books of photographs of Hartford.
With Arcadia.
Yeah.
I've always loved old pictures. It's part of the curator in me. And I love, you know, watching where a building's come. And, I mean, things like the Traveler's Tower was built in about 8 different phases. And you can find it where it was Grove Street to just by the front door. And then they build the second Main Street thing, something we never think of today. The Richardson Building, they built the first 3 arches and then the last 2. Anyway, so all these stories, and I ran it, and I've been thinking of a picture book, but how do you do it? And they're tough. I mean, we did deal state house, didn't have any money to front with. And then one day ran into Kirsty Sutton, who was trying to pitch our shop about carrying some of the Arcadia series. And I went, come here. Need to talk to you. So I said, okay, we're going to do a book on Hartford. Huh? I said, yeah, just let me know. I need to know. We got to have it out by October to make Christmas. Okay. And I had some pictures. I went to some of the museum collections in town who were very inhospitable. So that's never deterred me. I let board members know what I was looking for, and some brought in great stereopticons. I also hit up the commercial photographers like Kula, who was delighted because of his father had all these. And the Travelers had pictures before Constitution Plaza, so you could tell the story. And because it's a picture book, I let the pictures lay out the story. It's not a me book. My role as the captioner is only to get you grounded.
Do you have a lot of the same corner over time, like decade by decade?
Or I would go take. But some of them, like Constitution Plaza, I could show you before Constitution Plaza. We had the plans because I knew where to find the architect. Well, they printed 3,000 in 94, and they were gone within 6 weeks. And I kept saying to him, you need to print more because we need them for Christmas. They had never had a run like this. It's still doing. It has now fallen out of print, and I've just learned they're going to bring the first 3 volumes back because there is nothing like it. It's simple. It tells the story. It doesn't try to get cute. The pictures tell the story, and it's laid out sort of logically. You don't have to say, what year was Louis Fatio Butler head of the Travelers? And everybody's going, what? Well, that's the page I need for the picture. Don't do that. Tell me where I am on Main Street, east side, west side. What do you want? Keep it simple.
The scale is lovely, and they're affordable paperback. I mean, There have been a number of, you know, sort of $55 coffee table books on Hartford.
I did one of those, which I hated. I didn't hate the book. I hated the pricing because it's a great picture book, but I wanted this in the hands of everybody. I mean, that was part of it, as you say, well, I'm a kid of the 60s. Yeah. But I think everybody ought to be in on the story, and everybody ought to have access to the story. And that Arcadia series, I'm sorry, they've gone up slightly in price. They've stopped varnishing the cover, which I berate them about. But it's just wonderful stuff. And where possible, all the captions are keyed. So you could pick up the phone and call Kula and say, I'd like a print of the picture that's on page 5. Works for me.
You mentioned that you're a kid of the 60s. You did military service in 69 to 71.
I was drafted.
And then you did a master's here at Trinity.
Master's at Trinity, which is about the only way I could figure out to clear my head after. See, when I went off to the war, which I was not in favor of, but I couldn't figure out as an American how you could just say, I don't want to play this one. You know, I thought the war was wrong. All the conflict. But after all that, when the war, and everybody was saying, oh, go, it'll make a man out of you. And I thought I was doing just fine on my own. And then you get back in 71, everybody says, haven't seen you around, where you been? You were in the Army? What the hell did you do that for? And I did not go to Vietnam. I served my tour, ended up serving it stateside by pure chance. But I have no idea what the combat veteran feels who left being told this is a good thing and comes back and being asked by somebody who didn't do squat, why? So anyway, getting a master's to me was a great way to clear the head. Because I wasn't sure what I was going to do next.
We're trying to convince Ivan to get a master's here at Trinity.
Oh, you should.
Well, I was just at community court, and some potential clients thought that I should go into law because I was so helpful. So I'm leading that.
You mean they lost the case?
Well, actually, they were looking for a relative who'd been incarcerated on a possession charge, and I was able to direct them to the right court. But
and all you'd heard up to this point was bartender for people.
I'm a people person.
And a tour guide at the Mark Twain,
A tour guide at the Mark Twain House.
Although he was kind, he didn't remember me much, or didn't confess stories. Those are why I had long, I wore tall walking boots, pants went inside, had long hair, bow ties, and a cape.
Yes.
Bobby cape.
Eccentric.
No, just practical. Capes are great because you can put everything underneath them and stay dry. And I'd gotten them for a summer I worked in London. But I never forget, I used to go spend time over in the visitor center and talking to the guides and all that. But then I would also send out memos about new acquisitions and things. And one day I heard a wonderful story, maybe Ivan's story, of one guide to another said, I'd really like to meet Mr. Foudy, the curator. And the person said, well, there he is. And the person said, no, that's Bill. Who's Mr. Foudy? Because they just couldn't associate that anyone, and all, there was me, a part-time director, and two secretaries. So we just, but they couldn't imagine that you would go and sit and talk to the guides. What do you mean, not talk to the guides? They're the ones who are showing off what you're doing, connecting with the public. They're your eyes and ears. They hear somebody's got something, and they're protecting that. Why wouldn't I want these people to be on our side always? And they were fabulous. Now, I've been telling a story about giving a tour to the Bolshoi Ballet. Well, the answer is I didn't speak Russian. So if I was there, I'd greet him at the door and then let the guides do their stuff. They're good. But anyway, I'm not sure where the question started, but...
Okay. So
it's what my mother used to say. If you ever need a helping hand, you only have to look as far as the end of your arm. Just go do it. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ivan, I interrupted.
That could be a good slogan for
it. I wonder if the photo series were to continue 50 years from today, what we'd be taking pictures of in Hartford today that you think risks being lost?
Well, you know, the day is going to come. We'll have to restore the Phoenix building. some buildings, now don't everybody get excited, such as the Northeast Plaza, the two State Street Towers, the sort of bad tinker toy architecture across the old State House. I think those could be forgettable. Constitution Plaza, I would love to bring back the wonderful Sasaki water fountains. And I mean, the thing is breathtaking. As it was originally built. And they've since screwed around with it a lot, and the travelers added more buildings. But the whole scale of the thing. Have you ever been to Paley Park in New York where, forget the landscape firm, did this wall of water and, you know, Constitution Plaza was that good. Civic Centers, if it isn't gone by then, should be. City Place, bad architecture. The Goodwin building, not the old part, the new part. Oh, spare me. Just, you know, you really wonder whether they got their architectural degree at Cartooning 101. They're not good buildings. The Gold Building is not a good building. Yeah. The Travelers is a great building, except they've taken the gold balls off the very top. It had this celestial light St. Mark's Square, gold balls that would catch the sunlight, and Citigroup took that off because, you know, it's too expensive. Oh, stop. Yeah, and that whole entrance to the travelers, that silly little thing off across the Athenaeum. I mean, just, but the bunker mentality. If you question that the war was coming and unrest was coming, they all felt it and they built these bunkers. And they lower the street, so the Athenaeum is, the street is 9 feet lower than it used to be. You know, clearly people know there's unrest in the land, and their reaction is barricades. No, go out there and talk. Go out and listen. Go out and find out what do you need. I mean, is anyone going around and talking to our corporations that are here and saying, what do you need? What can I do to make your life better? Because I don't need to hear tomorrow's paper that you've moved to wherever. I need you to become an advocate for us.
Any final words for the people of Hartford?
Just go do it. Just do it. You know, begin. Nobody has it perfect on the drawing board. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't begin. And we spend so much time gumming it to death. And then by the time we're done, we didn't begin. And we actually often can't remember where we were. Or if we were... Were we here? Or as they used to say goodnight, Gracie. Goodnight, Gracie.
You've been listening to an interview with William Foudy, the former director of the Mark Twain Association and the Old State House in Hartford, on Hartford 2020. Hartford 2020 is a weekly program on the problems and opportunities facing the city of Hartford. On this program, you'll hear politicians and community activists, scholars and gadflies, and people from across Hartford's many communities sharing with us their candid opinions about how Hartford reached this point and where it's going. Guests include former city manager Al Ilg, Councilwoman Elizabeth Horton Scheff, former deputy mayor and mayoral candidate Bob Ludkin, Judge Raymond Norco, and labor leader Ed Vargas. Hartford 2020 is a joint project of Trinity College's Cities Data Center, the Office of Institutional Research and Planning, and WRTC. Your hosts are me, Jay Hughes, Associate Director of the Institutional Research and Planning Office, and Ivan Kuzik, Director of the City's Data Center. For more information about upcoming shows, or to listen to shows on the web, visit Hartford 2020's webpage at www.trincoll.edu, that's TRINCOLL, /departments/DPTS/IRP/, or call 860-297-2112, or email us at james.hughes, that's james.hughes, at trincoll.edu, trincoll.edu.